Welcome to the ninth episode of Redemption, a podcast series to save deposit return systems. Today, we look at the eighth practice from A Guide to Modern Deposit Return Systems, 10 Essential Practices, which you can find at bottlebillreimagined.org. This eighth essential practice is on optimized logistics. What are they and why do they matter? Let's go to the guide to see how this practice is articulated. Optimized logistics ensure uniform and fair procedures for those who handle beverage containers. Wherever possible, containers would be compacted to reduce the number of trucks on the road and their travel time. Fuel-efficient or alternative fuel vehicles are encouraged for added environmental benefit. Producers should conduct regular auditing of service operators and vendor procurement procedures as a matter of good business. If you've listened to earlier Redemption podcasts, you're aware that running a successful DRS comes with a multitude of responsibilities, spanning financial management, operational compliance, and effectiveness parameters. When those responsibilities and their parameters are clearly defined, the DRS works well. However, if left un- or ill-defined, system logistics get compromised, leading to potential issues. To learn how to get DRS logistics right, I talked once again with my esteemed colleague, Alexi Eisenberg, ReLoop's Director for France and Francophonie, who before he joined ReLoop worked to develop Quebec's new DRS legislation. There are so many logistical challenges when it comes to running a deposit return system. How has Quebec optimized logistics or approached the optimization of logistics in its DRS reform measures?
So to optimize the logistics in Quebec, it has been, first of all, decided to concentrate the obligation where you already have an important collection rate. By that, I mean in larger retailers, which are selling 80 to 90% of beverages, and collect actually 80% of what is collected, it's totally logic that they will just stay in the system and continue to offer the service. But for the last 10 to 20%, which is collected in thousands of small retailers, which is pretty costly for the small retailers and logistically provide the services, the transport, and everything around the logistic to collect a small amount of containers and go from a place to another one on long roads to offer the service everywhere. The reason why it's not now an obligation for them to collect, and it will give more efficiency the larger retailers with this opportunity to have a depot around, so this hybrid kind of combo. And after that, it's about the PRO, so the Producer Responsibility Organization, to build this logistic plan and to be able to be efficient. And by being efficient, it's about compacting the more material they can or crush the glass to avoid empties, containers, and the logistics, and to have high volume place and to collect in a high volume place.
When choosing service providers in a DRS, what performance criteria are best to use and what's been opted for in Quebec in terms of specific recommendations or requirements for having service providers, whether that be in counting or in transportation of the containers?
So all this contract with providers, suppliers, will be actually created and engaged by the PRO, so the organization with the producers. So they will contract the logistic, they will contract recyclers, counting centers, extra, extra. So there is nothing in the regulation just telling them how they will manage their system and who and how they will contract a service providers. But it's actually the obligation to show to the government they have a plan to provide a service everywhere in the province for the consumers. So it's about the deployment plan, the collection return point, all this network. But after that, the logistic part, the contract, it's all in the end.
If you wouldn't mind helping the listeners understand, in Quebec, the system operator responsibilities, how were these developed in the reforms? And not only what's included in the legislation around the system operator responsibilities, but then how is that tracked? How does the regulatory body use oversight to actually verify that the system operator is meeting its responsibilities?
First of all, this system operator is under agreement with the government for a 5 years period. So it's also about showing a plan, deployment plan, operational plan, financial plan, that the responsibility of producers will be rich through the regulation. So how, as producers, we will reach everything which is asked by the regulation. This is part of the agreement. And when the producer responsibility organization is under this agreement, they will have to deploy it and follow the plan, and every year sharing their performance report on different pieces of target they have to pursue.
In the guide, we talk about the system operator responsibilities. So we discuss the financial responsibilities, the compliance or the reporting obligations, the operational responsibilities, and you've just talked a little bit about that with developing the plan that gets approved, and then the effectiveness, right? Being able to demonstrate performance. And so each of these sort of four areas of responsibilities come with a sort of data management and reporting requirement, public communications, for example, through an annual plan. You know, if you can just name an example or two of the specific obligations in the Quebec reforms that really do create a better link between system operator activities and the intended outcomes.
For this obligation about the system operators, they will in Quebec have to provide a plan where they will tell that they will be able to offer the logistics service, how the transport will be managed, which recycler they will work, so how they will actually contract them, and if there is an audit plan. So different things at different level for the PRO to reassure the government that they are really able to provide the services and to manage the service.
So, you know, in the U.S. and probably many parts of Canada as well, the material collected in curbside, once it gets to a material recovery facility, that's it, right? There's no tracking of it. There's no really way to like follow the bottle after collection. And what I'm hearing from you is the Quebec system and the responsibilities placed on the PRO from a auditing standpoint and from a reporting standpoint and a verification requirements really ensures that the material that's taken to a recycler, that that's part of the official tracking for the program and the material that's in it. So you can actually verify what happens to the containers, right? And that the producers are held accountable, which again is very different than with curbside. And it's even different than the deposit return systems that we have in much of the U.S.
Exactly. And I give you an example about the obligation of the PRO to have a committee with the curbside to be able to count what's happening on containers and the deposit who go through the curbside system. And there is a mechanism between the PRO and from the DRS PRO and the curbside PRO to track containers and the deposits in MRF centers, track the performance and the possibility to unredeem also. So yes, the aim behind all this obligation is to track the containers and to have like a transparent system for consumers.
Let's jump to another continent to find out how Australia handles some of the logistical challenges. I'm joined by another ReLoop colleague, Robert Kelman, Director for Asia Pacific.
When it comes to running a DRS, there are many logistical challenges, one of them being the outcomes of the post-recovery use of the material in a deposit return system versus curbside. There's a clear advantage, as we describe in the guide, that comes from really clear and granular logistics requirements and best practice. So how in Australia do you feel there's been achievements to optimize logistics in the deposit return system?
We have a couple of different governance models. So I'll just describe the difference between, say, Queensland and New South Wales. The scheme coordinator, which is effectively the beverage industry, gets to choose the logistics provider or providers and the collection network. And so they go to tender and say, yes, you can be part of the scheme or you can't be. And then in New South Wales, scheme coordinator, which is mostly the beverage industry, sort of acts as a sort of clearinghouse and invoicing and data and these sort of functions, important functions. But then the government tenders for the collection and logistics network separately. So they go to market as an independent arbiter, really, and then they choose the best model for their citizens, if you want. And so in that particular case, you have a network operator. So the network operator is often a consortium of a logistics provider, a waste management company generally, and a collection network operator who has maybe technology or whatever it might be. And they then set up the collection network. They might do the whole thing, or they might subcontract parts of the network to other operators in New South Wales. The way that it works is that you have big automated depots where people can come and take bulk volumes of containers. They're automated. They have counting machines in there, so it's not sort of manually counted or something. And then there's a series of over-the-counter, which is smaller shops in smaller places where they will just take, you know, again, volumes from consumers and put them in a bag, and the network operator will sort of collect them. And then they have these reverse vending machine kiosks, and that's the important piece. So they have them split glass in one side, softs in the other. So your aluminium, your PET, your other plastics, LPB, liquid paper board in the other side. So the softs, they all get collected together, the softs, and the glass all gets collected together. And now there's breakage in the case of the glass. They have separate trucks. So there's a truck that just collects the glass from that particular facility, and there's a separate truck that just collects the softs. So there's no contamination of glass into the other materials. And the glass, as I say, might break, and it's commingled different colours, and it's beneficiated at a centralised point. The softs all go together as one unit and then are put into counting machines and then separated off into aluminium and PET and liquid paper board and those other materials. So there's a logistics efficiency from not having a truck that's only collecting the PET or only collecting clear glass or whatever it might be. So that's how they've managed that in the New South Wales scheme. So keeping them as separate as you possibly can without a requirement for on-site separation, because on-site separation is much more difficult, much more onerous.
That's true for the manually collected containers as well. You talked about the small shops or the depots. If it's being collected manually, there is no need for on-site sorting, which is very frequently the case in bottle bill states in the U.S., and it becomes a huge burden and a huge cost for redemption center owners or for canners, for example. But that doesn't exist in the system
It doesn't need to exist because of the technology around sorting. In New South Wales, there's a single facility up in the north, up on the coast kind of thing. And then there's one very large sorting facility in Western Sydney, which draws from the whole state all of that material and then separates it out, bales it or containerizes it, and it goes out from there for reprocessing. So it's all separated in that central facility. I mean, that's not the case in South Australia, which has had a scheme existing for 40 years where it is still largely manual. It's starting to automate a bit more now. But yeah, you have a depot network in South Australia. And they've been required to sort by brand as well as materials. And there is a reform agenda going on to try and make that scheme more efficient. But we're yet to see how that's going to sort of play out. But so depots deliver separate brands to different centralized, what they call super collectors, which is just crazy, yeah? So all of these things, yes. And as you say, you know, it increases the cost. So really for manufacturers, for producers, optimizing the efficiency of those schemes and making sure that those costs are minimized, it's smart to automate and it's smart to go with a centralized collection.
Thanks to all our listeners who are so committed to learning about modern deposit return systems and the environmental and economic benefits they bring to our communities. In this 9th episode of Redemption, we heard from Alexi Eisenberg how Quebec's new legislation optimizes logistics for its DRS, and from Robert Kelman about several different governance models used in Australia. We hope you'll join us for the 10th episode of Redemption next week when we explore the ninth essential practice, material processing and service fees. We'll learn details on what handling and processing fees are and why making them fair while setting out processing requirements to be met ensures an efficient DRS. In the meantime, don't forget to visit bottlebillreimagined.org to download the guide or subscribe to our newsletter, Bottle Bill Common Ground. You can also leave a review on Redemption wherever you listen to your podcasts. And remember, working together from a common ground of knowledge about these 10 essential practices for a modern deposit return system, we can move good bottle bills forward.